Adem udishate rajavara udata sangamatyat yumuntamaha rajavama disham napadatati prakatasava drisha shutirapi. So, listen very carefully. Quote, the dust from cows and calves on the road creates a kind of darkness, indicating that Krishna is returning home from the pasture. Also, the darkness of evening provokes the gopis to meet Krishna. Thus, the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis are covered by a kind of transcendental darkness and are therefore impossible for ordinary scholars of the Vedas to see. This verse from Lalit Madhava is spoken by Purnamasi in a conversation with Gargi. Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita 2:45, Triguna Vishaya Veda Nistriguna Bhavarjuna. Thus he advised Arjuna to rise above the modes of material nature, for the entire Vedic system is filled with descriptions involving Sattvagun, Rajagun, and Tamagun. Who is it? One second. Excuse me again. One second. Okay. Then shut the door, because I'm giving class now. Okay? And I'm going tomorrow night at the Rod Hoffman. Okay? The key, whatever. Okay, thank you. People are generally covered by the quality of Rajagun and are therefore unable to understand the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis and Vajra. Moreover, the quality of Tamagun further disturbs their understanding. The Vrindavan, however, although Krishna is covered by the hazy darkness of the dust, the gopis nevertheless understand that within the dust storm is Krishna. Because they are his topmost devotees, they can perceive his hand in everything. Thus, even in the dark or in a hazy storm of dust, devotees can understand what Krishna is doing. The purport of this verse is that under no circumstance is Krishna ever lost to the vision of exalted devotees like the gopis. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Saksurunmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vite Tanya Mano Bhishnam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rufa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Adadana Sitanam Dante Idam Yache Napuna Shima Rupa Padamboja Vishnam Janma Janmani. Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Well, greetings from Vrindavan. I think I came, was it yesterday, to Vrindavan to spend the last 5 days of Kartik here. And hosting many wonderful guests, Kishori Radha is here. I just spoke to her on the phone. She'll come with me tomorrow to Radha Kund. Bryn and Joy from Yoga Maya are here, so I'm hosting them for 10 days. And so many people. Ananda Govardhan from Moscow, my disciple, student that helps me there. And so many old friends. And today, Vrindavan is such an amazing place that, you know, it's being covered by urbanization, and that's painful. But every year, a door never fails to open up. And this was the most amazing thing. If you know, I mean, right around the corner from the temple, by the Krishna Balaram tree, where it used to be, you make a right. And I was walking there because we were going to go out to the forest, which we eventually did. And Lila Velasini, who's my assistant, and very able assistant, she starts telling this wonderful story of Radharani. And she's very expressive, but it was Krishna getting dressed up as a gopi to take Veena lessons from Radha. It's a whole story. It's very beautiful. And then she says, this place right here, I passed it 100,000 times. It's called Radha Tila, the place of Radha. And this is where the pastime happened. And they have a beautiful painting. And then I go in for the first time, and then I realize that these are the sadhus that preserve Vrindavan. Usually I have to walk about an hour to find them. Preserve Vrindavan in the original way. And, you know, the white sands of Raman Reti and all these old trees the sadhu was taking us to, and then it was just so beautiful, and I realized anytime I want, it's just 5 minutes away. I can go there and sit in the sands and peacefully do bhajan in a place where they left it untouched from the way it originally was. I mean, there's no electricity or anything like that. And it's also, I always knew it as the place where tens of thousands of birds congregate every day. Because where I used to live, at a certain time, they would clap their hands, and the birds would just fly, and they would, you know, hundreds and hundreds would fly, and then they would go back, and they'd do that. And every day at 3 p.m., they feed birds, and hundreds of thousands of birds from Vrindavan come to this place. They invited us in to just see when they come. He said that they're not parrots. They're gopis and gopis that come to the place at 3 p.m. at the time of the pastime to, you know, relish this wonderful pastime of, you know, Krishna, you know, coming to Radha dressed as a beautiful dark gopi. Anyway, and then we went out into the forest, and now I have the phone number of this sadhu that lives in the middle of the forest, and he loves me. I love him and his family. And it's just amazing. It's only 15 minutes, but he just has this flower farm in the middle of the forest. And if I called him, they just prepare for us in these hot, they're called Brijvasi rotis. They're the supreme food on earth, the most tasty spiritual thing, wonderful. So it was so nice. And then I gave my class at 4 o'clock. And then I just came from B.B. Govindaswamy's ambrosial kirtan with the moon. It's beautiful. Anyway, now to this verse, which is really kind of beautiful analogy. And as you know, as we've been studying here, this is a discussion between Ramananda Roy and Rupa Goswami, because Lord Chaitanya was so impressed with Rupa Goswami's poetry that he brought all the senior Vaishnavas, his associates, to hear Rupa Goswami recite. And again, can't make this point enough, that these two qualities, and they're often connected, of deep realization and deep expression. But even if you have expressive abilities, you have to have something to express. And in the Vaishnav line, you really can't have something to express unless you've had a substantial reciprocation with God or his devotee. Because that's what bhakti is. Bhakti is a substantial reciprocation in a relationship with the divine or his representative. And it's love, and love means reciprocation. Baba said Krishna is responsive. That's the key to bhakti. That bhakti means you're trying to realize the absolute truth by loving the absolute truth, entering into relationship with the absolute truth, and thus understanding the absolute truth by the reciprocation of the absolute truth to your love. And what's the reciprocation of love? It's the revelation of heart, the revelation of being. That's what happens in an intimate relationship. An intimate relationship hopefully means you get to know the true, unpretentious nature of someone. Their real beauty is a person's honesty, not their bluffing. No matter if the bluffing's made to look good, it's actually just very superficial. Because God is substantial, and when he's responsive, you get something substantial. And what you get is an understanding of that absolute reality. And not only an understanding of that absolute reality, an experience of that absolute reality. To someone who has that bhakti, that relationship with the divine, can share it with you. And that's what kirtan is. Kirtan is the outward expression of what's in the heart. The natural expression of the heart, which is called singing or glorification. Without the love in the heart, there's really no kirtan. It's not kirtan when someone is just an expert singer and is trying to attract the opposite sex. If someone's an expert singer and is trying to enhance their reputation, that's not bhakti. Bhakti starts with the love in the heart. So Rupa Goswami had that love in the heart because he entered into an intimate relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the door of which is Sharanagata, of taking full shelter. Entering that door, one enters into the world of bhakti and emotional experience and revelation and experience of the revelation of God and the beauty of that. Basically, our practice is to show God our sincerity. It's not just the externals. It's what's behind the externals. Which is that devotion in the heart. He had so much devotion. One second. Okay, Hare Krishna, this is Dhanadhara Swami again. So, this was the beauty of Rupa Goswami. So he has this beautiful poetic expression. And now there's a beautiful discussion. And this Ramananda Roy, who is also a Kavi, a great poet, he's asking some specific questions about poetic composition and how Rupa Goswami expressed different parts of his drama. purpose of drama is to give an aesthetic experience. The purpose of drama, spiritual drama, is to give one an experience of reality. And the experience of reality is rasa. Rasa means devotion, bhakti rasa. These dramas express bhakti rasa, but they have the same technical components. The only difference is that the objective is to express reality rather than maybe a romantic or a mundane tragic, chivalry or whatever the things are. So Ramananda Roy was asking technical things, and now he just says, just speak something further. And Rupa Goswami quotes this verse, and it's metaphorical, and it's making also within the drama a very, very deep philosophical points. And the point here is that God is covered by a type of darkness. So the analogy is darkness does not mean that there's not God. It means that your vision is clear. Your vision is not clear. So the analogy is given between Krishna's pastimes, where he is hidden. But even though he's hidden, there's something very wonderful to be revealed in Krishna being hidden. Just like we celebrated the disappearance day of Srila Prabhupada. And the appearance day is called Avirbhav. It means that he's visible. And Tirobhav means that he's hidden. Basically, it means hidden. So, when the spiritual master disappears, he's not God gone, he's hidden. And although it's painful, there's also some benefit into that, benefit in that. Just like there's benefit of when Krishna's coming home from the forest every day, the residents of Vrindavan are so anxious to see him. We have some sentiments of attachment or infatuation or attraction to someone. And they're generally connected to ego. We're attached to people in relationship to our conception of joy and control. Even a mother's love, which is pure, or which is the purest type of love in this world, it's not devoid of ego. And therefore, the parents often are attached to the children for how the children can enhance their reputation if their children do well. So it's not completely pure. So the spiritual master becomes just when the residents of Vrindavan, their love, which is free from ego, which is actually connected to the real self, a love which is holding the potency of love, which is God's potency, the essence of his bliss or internal potency, which is the ultimate pleasure for God, is love. This is held in a devotee's heart. So we can't imagine how much attachment there is when you're connected in a real way with an eternal, substantial, all-attractive object that's perfectly reciprocal with your love. Everyone is searching for that. As Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Devotion, the loving potency wants to be reposed. Who cannot say that they have a loving potency and they want it to be reposed, and they're really looking for the proper object to repose that potency? Ultimately, it's God. But when that perfected state of the living entity, Prabhupada said, the perfected state of living entity is called the devotee. So the perfected state, what is the degree of that love? What is the degree of that attachment? And what is the degree of the detachment and the absence of your lover? As it said in the Shikshastika, when Lord Chaitanya is expressing what is bhava, he's praying out to Krishna, in your absence, the whole world is vacant. There's no value. When you have that and you lose that, you can see no value in anything else. So what is the consciousness of the residents of Vrindavan during the day when their Krishna is gone to the forest? And what is their consciousness when Krishna is returning to the from the forest? When they hear his lute, and when they see the padaduli, the dust of Vrindavan, so the dust from the cows when Krishna's returning home from the Raja, Dada, the dust from the cows, it's only increasing the anticipation and love for seeing Krishna. This way, there's a kind of darkness in Krishna's pastimes. There's something that covers Krishna to increase our love. And then there's another type of darkness here, the evening. Which provokes the gopis to meet Krishna. So it's covered. Things are being covered. But that being covered in the evening, when Vrindavan is covered in the evening and Radha wants to meet Krishna and Krishna wants to meet Radha secretly, the darkness is facilitating something wonderful. So it's given an analogy, and there's another type of darkness with Krishna's pastimes which covers people, even scholars, from understanding Krishna. Because you cannot understand Krishna simply intellectually. Prabhupada describes that a guru-disciple relationship, it's not like the guru touches the disciple on the head
It's almost like an electric shock, Prabhupada said, and then there's enlightenment. And Prabhupada said, although that's not the case, and that's the relationship that enlightens one, it's not just intellectual either. Krishna is revealed in love. Krishna is understood by love. And when the intellect is connected to love, then there's revelation of God. And how is the intellect connected to love? When we serve God through the intellect. When we read and we study, not to be great scholars, but to be great devotees. When we read in a mood to be transformed. When the intellect is seeking the truth, to be changed by the truth. Not seeking knowledge to control the environment more for my own egotistical and sensual advancement. So it's not understood that way. That's why Prabhupada would always quote a verse from the Upanishads, Yasya Deve Parabhaktir Tata Deve Tata Guru. The one who has implicit faith in the spiritual master and the Supreme Lord, the imports of the Vedas are revealed. Because what is the import of the Vedas? The import of the Vedas is, according to Bhagavad Gita, Vedaischa Sarve Amevya Vedyo Vedanta Vid Veda Vida Evacham. Of all the Vedas, I am to be known. So what's the import of the Vedas? It's to know Krishna, and knowing Krishna means to understand ourselves, just as to see the sun means to see ourselves. And when we actually see Krishna, we actually understand Krishna, then what happens is we understand our position in relationship to Krishna, which is as his servant. That's what we want to understand by going through the Vedas. We want to understand what is reality and what is our relationship to reality. We want to understand who we are. So the Vedas is to help us become free from the misidentification of ourselves with the body in the as a facility for I am the enjoyer, I am the controller. That's called ahankara or false ego. Knowledge is meant to get us free from that misidentification. So unless one acts on that platform preliminarily by having faith in Krishna and having faith in the spiritual master and having faith in our position as their servant, unless one has that preliminary practice and realization of service and surrender, one will not be in the standpoint to see that within the Vedas. You'll have no frame of reference to understand it, even though it's the essence of the Vedas. So even scholars, if they're not humble, can't realize the truth. And therefore, they have no access to understanding Krishna's pastimes. Intellectually alone, you can't understand them. It's just like when you're in Vrindavan. I've had this experience many, many times. You're hearing Krishna's pastimes. Which are actually manifestations of the purest love. But unless you have some preliminary experience of that prema or love of Godhead, which begins with surrender to Guru and Krishna, unless you have some preliminary experience of that, you will not be able to see that in Krishna's pastimes. See what? See that surrender and bhakti. Rather, the forms in Krishna's pastime, which is the intensity of the pure conjugal relationship, which is simply a mood of service, simply a mood of wanting to please, has absolutely no tinge of selfishness, you will not be able to see that without the experience of it. So there's a concept here that to understand Shastra, you have to have some experience of what you're looking for. I always tell the story of when Dr. Fakir Mohan, the great Vaishnav scholar, he was just here in Vrindavan, how rare to have the association of such a soul. And when he was down in Puri, Jagannath Puri, and he would speak at my yatra, and the Sanskrit students from Govardhan would come every year, and he saw them sitting in the front row, and he knew them. And he said, who's Shastridya? Who knows the Shastra? And then very animated way, he said, one who practices. So unless you have a preliminary practice of love, beginning with the door of Sharanagata, by having faith, which means to trust, and surrender to Krishna and his representative, you will not be able to see and understand Krishna's pastimes, which are an expression of the greatest selflessness. That's why at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the second verse, Jiva Goswami's commentary is very, very brilliant. Because the verse literally says, glorifying the Bhagavatam, that if you hear it once, Krishna will automatically be arrested in the heart. It's such a nice poetic expression. God will not be able to move from your heart. Why? He will be bound by the ropes of your love. That is the result of hearing it once. And therefore, Jiva Goswami makes the very logical statement, why doesn't that happen to us? And then he gives the answer. Because we don't want the message of the Bhagavatam. We don't want to surrender to Krishna fully. And therefore, we don't get that message. And therefore, we hear the Bhagavatam's instructions. And when we hear it enough times, we finally have realization of it. We actually see that this is a beautiful thing for our benefit. When we are following the voice and will of the Absolute Reality, rather than our ego and our desire to control and enjoy. That's humility. Humility is to accept an authority greater than your own selfishness. So that's a tough one. But when you hear it and think about it and gradually realize, then you enter the door of bhakti, and your hearing of the Bhagavatam is not an intellectual exercise, it's an experiential exercise. You're experiencing your love for Krishna in every word of a book, in a book whose every word is glorification of Krishna. So that's a whole different thing. But it takes that realization. The realization comes from hearing. And then the conclusion comes. The conclusion comes of an understanding of the Absolute Reality. I've been meditating on this recently, what it means. To understand that there is a God. What does that mean? What are the ramifications of that? If that is actually true, what does God mean? A being that's always existed with all power and all knowing and all loving. What does that mean? What does that truth dictate in terms of what we should be doing? And when there is a glimpse of an understanding of that reality, in any free moment, we have to be chanting in a mood of serving and taking shelter of that divine absolute reality. It becomes a necessity within our consciousness. But if we maintain the ego, we will be forced not to see God. Because ego means we put ourselves in the center, and once we put ourselves in the center, we cannot see who is. So if you have ego, and you're trying to be a scholar, and you're trying to learn, so that you can become respected. Then, instead of seeing Krishna, you'll see a kind of cloud. You'll see a kind of darkness. Not covering Krishna, covering your own perception of Krishna. And that's why Srila Prabhupada was so realized, because he understood this point so deeply, because he lived it so deeply. That unless you move out of a self-centered, egocentric world view and conception, where you view the world as objects for your self-endorsement, unless you move out of that worldview, you'll not be able to understand Krishna. Looking at Krishna through that worldview, you'll see the pastimes of Krishna as mythological and mundane. You won't see Krishna. And here Prabhupada makes another point that's even deeper. Just as when there's that potaduli, that dust storm, as Krishna comes back, and it doesn't cover the gopis from their understanding of Krishna and their anticipation of his arrival. That one who's a real devotee, Krishna's never lost to his vision. In the Indo-Pakistan War, where there was a blackout in Delhi in the evening, some reporters questioned Prabhupada, you know, what would you do if some bomb came by? I would see Krishna. That's what Dharma means. Dharma means duty, but our duty has to be based on what we are. And what we are is a relationship with Krishna. So if we don't understand God, we really can't fully do our duty. There's such a beautiful, beautiful analogy that's given here. And it's just one of Rupa Goswami's, just one of the poems that he's expressing. Let me read it again, because it's such a beautiful verse. The dust from cows and calves on the road creates a kind of darkness, indicating that Krishna is returning home from the pasture. Also, the darkness of evening provokes the gopis to meet Krishna. Thus the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis are covered by a kind of transcendental darkness and are therefore impossible for ordinary scholars of the Vedas to see. He quotes another verse from Lalita Madhava, spoken by Gargi, the daughter of Gargamuni. May the sweet sound of Lord Krishna's flute, his authorized messenger, be glorified. For it expertly releases Srimati Radharani from her shyness and attracts her from her home to the forest. My dear friend, who is this fearless young man? Radharani is speaking to Lita Dev. He is as bright as a lightning cloud, and he wanders in his pastimes like a maddened elephant, from where has he come to Vrindavan? Alas, by his restless movements and attractive glances, he is plundering from the vault of my heart the treasure of my patience. Srimati Radharani is the Ganges. This is thoughts of Krishna. His thoughts are expressed in Nitamani in the second chapter. Srimati Radharani is the Ganges in which the elephant of my mind enjoys pastimes. She is the shining of the full autumn moon for the Chakora bird of my eyes. She is the dazzling ornament, the bright and beautiful arrangement of stars on the border of the sky of my chest. Now today I've gained Srimati Radharani because of the highly elevated state of my mind. After hearing this, Ramananda Roy submitted the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the super excellence of Sri Rupa Goswami's poetic expressions, and began to praise it as he had thousands of mouths. Ramananda Roy said, "This is not a poetic presentation. It is a continuous shower of nectar. Indeed, it is the essence of all ultimate realizations appearing in the form of plays." The wonderful descriptions of Rupa Goswami are superb arrangements to express loving affairs. Hearing them would plunge the heart and ears of everyone into a whirlpool of transcendental bliss. What is the use of a bowman's arrow or a poet's poetry if they penetrate the heart but do not cause the head to spin? Without your mercy, such poetic expressions would be impossible for an ordinary living being to write. My guess is that you have given him power. We'll end there for today. Are there anybody like to say hello? Maybe there's some problem with muting and unmuting. Let me try to unmute the thing myself.
Hare Maharaj, Shastra.
Shastra, Hare Krishna.
Hi.
Hey. See you soon.
Yeah.
I'm excited about Puri. Jayadvita Swami is coming now. Really nice people.
Wow,
anybody
wonderful.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna.
Who is that again? Please say hello.
Hare Krishna, this is Henry.
Henry, Hare Bol.
Hare Bol.
Yeah. We're having a nice time here in Braj. And in a few days, Akinchana Krishna will be married to Rati. There's a big wedding there, too. Other devotees here. Anybody else like to say hello?
Okay. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol. That's Sula and Carl. Yeah. Radha Charan is here. He's coming to my classes. A lot of people listen to the classes, not directly online. He likes to hear, have all his old friends and people he knows say hello. Anybody else like to say hello today?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Chris in Pennsylvania.
Chris, that's really nice that you're in touch with Monica Moore. She's not far away, and that'll be nice. She said that she's going to meet your family and then maybe go to a program
right together.
That's great. Yeah.
That'll be great.
Yeah, wonderful. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Who's that?
Oh, this is Scott in D.C.
Who is that?
Hare Krishna, this is Scott from D.C.
Who is it?
Scott Green from D.C. Yes.
From D.C.? Oh, Scott. Oh, great, Scott. Wonderful. What's that? Okay. I can't hear. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hello, Maharaj.
Is that Mother Injani?
Yes, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Wonderful. I feel the bhakti of your voice. It's so sweet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is DJ.
DJ, how you go?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
In regards to all your family, please.
Thank you very much.
Sorry,
Rod,
I
hear
so many nice people here. It's great. Anybody else like to say hello? Well, not everybody knows how to mute and unmute. So. One more person? Okay, and we'll end. Don't you go to do this talk at this individual.